Michigan's Children proudly presents Speaking for Kids, the podcast where we explore crucial conversations impacting the lives of all Michigan children, youth, and families, especially the most vulnerable. Join us each month as we explore public policies and issues in the best interest of our kids and families. We'll bring you lawmakers and policymakers, advocates fighting for change, and the people most affected by those decisions. With our host, Matt Gillard, President and CEO of Michigan's Children, we'll invite you to become engaged too and show you how to take action on what matters most to you. Episodes are recorded live and shared virtually on YouTube and the audio hosting sites Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.
Hello, I'm Matt Gillard, the President and CEO of Michigan's Children, and welcome to another edition of Speaking for Kids, the podcast brought to you monthly by Michigan's Children. Well, immigration issues have certainly been front and center in our country really since the last election, and something that we're hearing all about the impacts of in the proposals and the processes that are happening around our country and certainly right here in Michigan. We know at Michigan's Children, we're very concerned about the impact that all of this activity is having on kids and families. And I'm very pleased to be able to have three people who are front and center at the heart of this fight right here in Michigan, doing great work for kids and families, to really have a conversation about what is happening in Michigan, what some of the challenges that kids and families are facing as a result of all of this attention and focus on immigration. So we're going to get right into the conversation. I'll introduce my guests and then let them introduce themselves as well, and talk a little bit about the work that they're doing. First, we have Eleanor Jordan, who is a managing attorney for training and system impact at the Michigan Immigrant Rights Center, more commonly known as MIRC. Eleanor, welcome and thanks for being here. You want to tell our audience, just to give them a little brief intro of the work that you're doing?
Thanks so much. It's an honor to be here with my colleagues from Centro doing such important work as well, and appreciate the opportunity to speak up on behalf of kids. Michigan Immigrant Rights Center represents children who are in federal custody in Michigan and fighting their immigration cases, as well as children who are released to family members, and represents immigrant families across the state. We are a statewide legal resource center. We do systems advocacy, and we're here to support immigrant communities every day.
Thank you so much for being here. We also are pleased to be joined by Michaela Perez, who's a student success advocate and advisor at Centro Multicultural La Familia, as well as Luna Carbajal, who is a parenting program coordinator at Centro as well. Welcome, Michaela and Luna. Would you introduce yourselves quickly for our audience as well?
Sure, I can go really fast. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited about this opportunity. My name is Michaela Perez. I work at Centro Multicultural La Familia in our Éxito Educativo branch. So that means that we service students that are kind of higher up in their educational process in high school, looking to go to college or find whatever their next steps are after graduation. We help them with all of their resources, all of their planning, and making those dreams become a reality. I'm really excited because our organization offers a variety of other resources to families. We are a multicultural center, so we work with everybody, but especially in these pressing times, we're trying to give back to to populations particularly impacted by a lot of what is going on at the federal and state level, federal level. I'm really glad to be here, and I'm excited to pass it on to my colleague, Luna.
Yes, thank you so much. My name is Luna. I am a parenting program coordinator for Centro Multicultural La Familia, and we are concerned now and busy to provide safe space for families to reduce the stress and continue giving the children tools for development. So these programs, Parent Cafe and Abriendo Puertas, are the methodologies for the families, and we stay here for all the parents, all the children.
Thank you. Thank you all so much for joining us for this very important conversation. So Eleanor, I'll start with you. And I know this is a big question, and it's really is just meant to kind of kick off this conversation. But really, if you can kind of explain to us how the current administration, meaning the Trump administration, how their particular focus on immigration and their particular immigration policies are impacting the children and families that you serve? And really, what's been the big change since we've seen this new administration come into place here?
Well, I just think the overwhelming impact has been to create fear and toxic stress for children and families alike. So we know that children thrive when they have a routine, they have stability, and when they know their caregivers are there to protect them. So all of those have been ripped away. We see protected areas like schools have been deemed available for immigration enforcement. And many families are living under pretty much constant terror that they will be separated from one another. So more recently, we saw an attack on funding for unaccompanied immigrant children's legal services that has caused absolute chaos for providers like Merck, who serve these children and are their voice in both immigration court and with different custodial networks. And so these legal services are just a lifeline. They're there for 26,000 of the most vulnerable children across the United States and 800 children here in Michigan. And so our unaccompanied children's program helps reunite children with safe caregivers, accesses legal protections available. And we received a stop work order last Tuesday, and that order was rescinded again on Friday, but the struggle to make sure that these services continue to be available is absolutely ongoing. All of these pillars of stability for children being taken away creates a toxic stress that is just palpable for the kids that we serve.
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually saw when that stop work order first came out, I saw one of your colleagues actually from Merck on MSNBC talking about the impact to the work that you're doing. And so, you know, this is obviously front and center here in Michigan, but it's also being felt around the country as well. And just so people are clear, so one of the executive orders that President Trump had issued created this stop work order that has now since been rescinded, but created this uncertainty in funding and in operations for organizations like Merck. So Michaela and Luna, how about from your end? What are you seeing now with this kind of issue being where it is with the current administration?
I guess I would say based on where I'm at and what's been going on is we at least saw in a lot of the local schools around here, a pretty sharp decline in the attendance rates for students. And our organization partners quite a bit with the counselors, the English language development departments at those schools and the administrators. We set on a task force to try to particularly address barriers and concerns that immigrant children are facing in the K-12 system. And kind of like Eleanor stated, like that fear and that uncertainty was causing quite a bit of families to withdraw and children to feel that they didn't have that right through to a public K-12 education, just because the fear mongering, as Eleanor was stating, and in addition to other concerns with respect to executive orders, Dear Colleague letters going out at the U.S. Department of Education letters, the federal grant pause that there was for a while at the end of January, beginning of February. A lot of students in my particular line of work where we're trying to help them plan for their futures aren't able to really envision what a safe future would look like. In my organization and in my role where we're trying to get students resources, a lot of those already are very challenging for students that might have unique immigration statuses to find, whether they can guarantee that they have access to in-state tuition, if they're paying international tuition, if they can utilize FAFSA funding to make education attainable. All of that already was very concerning before this administration, and now that's only been exacerbated by unfortunately, I have a colleague that works at, or a colleague, I'm sorry, a friend that works at Merck, and she was kind of saying too, like in the past, it felt like we had the confidence and the know-how to reassure our clients when they were concerned that we do have plans in place. And with the way that this administration is so quickly changing what their policies are, orders coming out, getting rescinded, this thing's getting paused, it's coming back, just back and forth like that, it's made it pretty hard for us to assure a lot of our clients, like, there will be like a safe, secure future. We're obviously going to keep trying to empower them and keep fighting so that that is the reality. but it has become challenging in my line of work to be able to say, tell the student, hey, let's plan for what you're going to be doing this fall when you're studying at a university, trade school, community college, when they don't even know if they're going to be here, or it doesn't even feel like it's worth it to them. And not even to, you know, sort of to go back a little bit to get to that finish line of getting your high school diploma, if you don't even know if you should be going to your school in the first place. So we've just been working quite a bit with different districts to ensure that they have a plan in place if any immigration encounters happen on school grounds, and that that's being communicated in an equitable manner for students or students and parents to understand. Because I've talked with districts that are like, yep, we sent out a plan, and it's not even available in languages that immigrant families might speak. And so I'd say that's about where we're at right now with that. But even though it seems really grim, we want to make sure that we're still trying to be positive and still trying to fight the good fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Luna, anything to add from your end?
Yes, thank you so much, Michaela. So yes, we know that the family are very afraid, and we want to, you know, to... yes, and the families, we don't want to get out to their homes, but we're making an effort to make fathers and mothers know their rights. And here we help them make safety plans with documentation, notarized letters, and contact with consulates or lawyers for possible cases of family separation, so that they are financially prepared and have to care the children's resolve. So I think this is super important because, the parents, the fraud is like a immobilization, and I think the do the plan make a different situation in her minds and her body, in their bodies. So I think the safety plans, the action is better for them.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree. And you all hinted at many, many important aspects of that. And I think, at the fundamental level, it's the fear and the uncertainty. And that's really, the real harm and challenge behind all of this. And it in many different ways as well. I mean, the sheer volume of new directives or approaches that are coming out makes it very scary for folks. And Michaela, you're right. And we're hearing that from folks all over. I mean, not just from schools, from after school programs, even from childcare centers and others, this drop in enrollment, right? And fear of participating in programs because of what may happen and it's a big challenge. And then, you know, we're seeing drops in benefits then for families across the board because of all of this that's happening. And it's really tragic, and it's hard to even, wrap your arms around, I think, from an advocacy standpoint. So Michigan's Children's a policy and advocacy organization, but we obviously work with a lot of partners who are more direct service providers. I guess a couple questions. How, in general, are the school districts and or local governments and other groups that you work with working with you maybe to address this, or what more could they be doing? And then even in the terms of childcare providers or after school program providers and others that aren't necessarily and haven't really been, that engaged on immigration issues, what should they know in order to best protect the kids and the families that they're serving?
I could jump in and speak to that really quick, unless somebody else has something they want to say. I don't want to cut anybody off. At least, and again, this is my personal opinion, just from what I've witnessed and seen the different approaches across districts that we've partnered with. And there's been some districts that have been ready to tackle this sort of situation head on, and others that want to sort of see what happens and are playing it more where they feel if they address it more directly, that's going to heighten the fear. However, I've seen that families, the uncertainty is more scary than them knowing directly what would be going on when they drop their kids off at school. And so that's sort of been what we're encouraging districts to do, because we did encounter a few administrators that were like, well, we don't know if they're going to come. And the thing is, we want to say, let's not think of it as an if, let's think of it as a when. So that in the situation that does happen, where immigration agents do come to the school, that you will know exactly what to do. And we walk them through what has been communicated to your staff, what's been the internal communication, what's been the external communication. Have you consulted with lawyers on the situation? Do you have different plans between different schools, and how's this working at bus stops? How's this working in on playgrounds? Because we know that a lot of ICE agents will use a lot of tactics that aren't necessarily, I don't want to say fair, because that doesn't, I mean, I don't know if I would agree that any of it's fair. I don't, but that can get a little bit meddled and be in some sort of gray areas and aren't always as clear and overt as other enforcement officers utilize in this country. And so when we have talked with organizations and school districts that have felt a little bit more to address the problem like head on, they're making sure their internal communication is very clear. If a teacher is stopped, they know who to refer that ICE agent to. If a principal is stopped, they know who to refer that person to. They're even going so far as to inform students, these are your rights, here are your red cards that are going to explain what you should and shouldn't have to do if an officer encounters you directly. Everybody knows what their role is. We've been directed here at our organization to give resources to administrators on role play that they can do with their staff and with their students so that everybody just feels well equipped. Because I'm seeing when districts are more taking a more passive approach because they're scared, okay, if we say something about this to families, it's really going to scare them away. Families feel a lot better when they at least know that there is some sort of plan in place. And for districts that have a plan in place and families still aren't comfortable, they've sort of looked to seeing if they can go back to offering remote education again, just to ensure that students aren't falling through the cracks or that people aren't obtaining education. Because then you also run into the situation, unfortunately, with truancy laws, if parents aren't bringing their children to school, well, now your family's been flagged and legal authorities have to come and talk to you. So that's going to cause a whole other situation if you're already preoccupied. So my advice to administrators, if you are listening, would be to make sure that you're consulting with legal advisors in your area to make sure that you know exactly what your rights are, what your staff can do, and how you would play out any sort of situation if an immigration officer were on your campus. Some things that I've seen that have been really great is some principals are getting trained on the differences between the different types of warrants that ICE could bring to their schools. And it's helping people in the front office feel very confident if somebody were to come, what they do and do not have to comply with. And then also making sure that you're abiding by FERPA laws. What private information has to be protected for families, I think, is really important. And finally, making sure, regardless of the fear that you have about communicating with families, making sure that you are saying something. I think the silence is causing a lot more concern than pretending like it's not happening when these people don't have the ability or luxury or privilege to pretend it's not happening. You need to be willing to have these vulnerable and uncomfortable conversations, because unfortunately, that's just the reality of the situation. Make sure it's available in a variety of languages. If there's somebody that works for your school district that you've seen migrant families particularly like and trust, trying to consult with that person, see if they'd be willing to be a spokesperson and whatnot. Those have been some things that we've witnessed that have went pretty far. And I don't want to speak for everybody else on the panel, so I'm going to let them go ahead right now.
Yeah, that's great advice though, right? I mean, communication is key and knowledge is power. And you're right. I mean, I it's good to hear you say that, but I'm not surprised. I mean, people have to recognize that this is an issue we're dealing with, and we need to inform people as best we can to be prepared for it. So,
and Eleanor, how about from Merckson? Kayla just said, I just wanted to also add one small thing that I would applaud on the state level is that the Michigan Department of Education issued a couple memoranda. And one memoranda that really follows up on all of this and empowers school districts, in fact, reminds them of their FERPA requirements and of the different requirements that they have that is available in multiple languages that are most spoken in Michigan. And that's available on the Michigan Department of Education website to just sort of underscore all of these specifics. It just outlines what the law is and encourages those who wish to uphold the law in these circumstances and want to make sure that they understand the law, that empowers them to have that backing. And beyond that, we've also just seen many, I wanted to offer on Merck's website, we have offered superintendents across the state a step-by-step kind of toolkit that gives them the chance to go through and examine their policies and see where they can be more protective. And that was incredibly well received. We've heard many districts be really positively responding to that. So we know that the people who are supposed to be protecting our kids want to have their backs, and that is incredibly encouraging to see. And the last thing I'll say is that the Association of Aftercare Providers in Michigan also reached out and has received a training so that that is available on file. If anybody's an aftercare provider and didn't get that training, that should be available to you for free.
Yeah, that's Michigan After School Partnership. We're a member of MASP. Yes, and thank you for doing that as well. And so you led right into my next question. So that's great. And I did see that one memo at least from the Michigan Department of Education, and it did get I saw some publicity around it as well, which is great. So for those of you, quick sidestep here. So for you, those of you advocates who are listening to this, there is things you can do, right? I mean, obviously, we'll be encouraging you and urging you to contact your federal representatives, congressional members, about the broad scale immigration issues and what's happening there. But even at the local level, with your local school boards, your local superintendents, and at the state level as well, there's a role for all levels of government to play in helping children and families that are obviously experiencing very difficult situations because of this misguided approach to immigration that we're seeing coming out of the federal administration right now. Is there any, Eleanor, I'm glad you said that about the state memo. Is there anything else the state could be doing? I know that states are scrambling, and I've got colleagues that we work with in other states, obviously with organizations similar to ours. And I think, I feel better about where we're at in Michigan in some regards, but is there other things that the state could be doing to help protect kids and families through this?
Many actors in our state are really working hard to make sure that some of the most egregious impacts of this of the recent efforts have are mitigated. For example, we really applaud the lawsuit by our attorney general to stop that has successfully protected kids who were born here from having their birthright citizenship taken away, for the time being, at least that the impact of that executive order has been stayed thanks to that advocacy. This is the kind of effort that can be incredibly helpful. State lawmakers should resist a recent batch of different anti-immigrant proposals that have come into the state legislature. And we just want to highlight that, kids and families are feeling quite terrified right now. And so anything that state officials can do to enhance language access, in accordance with we recently passed excellent legislation, that enhances language access to state agencies. So making sure that, people really have full language access to the different messages you're trying to convey, as well as access to understand what their public benefits look like. We also applaud the State Department of Health and Human Services for educating their staff on what to do in the event that records were sought. We know that state agencies would like to stand by children in this circumstance, and we're encouraged to see a will to try to do that. We want to make sure that some of the most challenging pieces of state legislation that have been brought forward are resisted.
Yeah, that's great to hear. No, and we certainly join you in those efforts. I know the resolution on sanctuary cities caused a lot of concern amongst a lot of our colleagues in Lansing a couple of weeks ago. Michaela Luna, how about from your end? What more can maybe local officials or state officials do, or also people who are listening to this, who are advocates and care about kids and families, what can they be doing to help in this situation?
Thank you. I think one more thing is to advocate for the educational authorities must be made very aware for being more compassionate and empathetic and kind on this situation that gets very complicated for many families. So keep, the eyes really open do bullying cases among the student population, prevent, address, and contain cases of discrimination. So I think in this moment it's really important to listen to the kids, listen to the families, and of course take care and care, you know, the family. So yes, of course the kids in this moment, it's not only that for fair. So it's like the kids stay repeat all the things on the television on the for the families, and it's a really really complicated situation for all the Hispanic or Latin American family. So I think yes, you know, care and kind and love in this moment is very important.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really agree. And that's something that I really love about working here. And Luna's always like a light in the situation in our office, is just being very positive, very compassionate. And I really admire that about her, and that she reminds us of that. And I think that's a great perspective to have. For me, I like to take the approach where I want to advise people to stay as informed as possible. It's really hard. There's so much misinformation out there, so much circulating, kind of like Luna was pointing out, the kids are hearing different things and the parents might be understanding. There was a really interesting situation that happened in a district that I'm working at, where there was a rumor that was the middle schoolers started, that I will not entertain on this podcast, but it was giving a lot of the parents a lot of concern about what their policies were going on over there. And that's again where making sure with meaningful language access laws that went into effect in 2023 in Michigan, that agencies are making sure they're communicating directly and in like ways that people can understand. I don't want it to always be really complicated technical jargon that people that maybe don't speak the language that was used to design the documents and the laws and policies for them, when they're trying to understand what it means, to not be able to fully grasp it, because that can be a barrier as well. I think that something that I've been really grateful for is there is a larger national organization. They put on a monthly college corner meeting that some of my colleagues were jumping on. And that is like a nationwide effort where advisors that are working with students that are undocumented mainly get to go and sort of share resources. So there's not only like legal advisors there as well, but also just a safe space for us to console each other and talk about what's going on. I think, as Luna was bringing up, like community right now, being there for each other, being compassionate is really important. And then making sure that when we're encountering misinformation, that we can be as informed as possible to address and let people know what their rights actually are. I think that's going to be really important, especially for people in power, to make sure they're staying up to date. And I feel very optimistic that there are so many advocates at the state and federal level, and also national organizations that are bringing these lawsuits about in the way, you know, to prevent further discrimination from happening to migrant families. And I'm really thankful, so long as that we keep up to date in this type of stuff, that we could best inform the clientele that we're working with as well.
Oh, that's great. No, I appreciate hearing that. What happens when a child's legal representation doesn't show up? What would that mean for the process if we lost that?
Yeah, I mean, we can look, we have some evidence of what might happen, because we can look to the reason that we have legal representation for kids who are in immigration court. And that is a lawsuit brought several years ago by a plaintiff called Flores. And it's the Flores website, the Flores lawsuit that sort of began the practice that may be surprising. This wasn't the practice before, of treating children differently than adults in immigration detention. And the child that was the plaintiff in that had a really harrowing experience in custody. And so without advocates to monitor and alert and make sure to take action when kids are in custody. And even when we are there, kids have experienced things like sexual assault in custody. Kids have experienced many things that we have had to advocate on their behalf anyway. And so, as advocates, we have taken up the mantle of really making sure that the promise of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act has been to put them in the least restrictive setting that's feasible. And that's what the law requires. And we know that without representation, kids can experience the sort of ordinary injustice of being kept in a more restrictive facility than is necessary, and at worst, could experience things like very dramatic and significant forms of abuse. And there wouldn't be someone to really blow the whistle on that kind of abuse. So I feel pretty dire about it. And then they also would not have the ability to learn about their rights in the immigration system. So their custodial rights could very much be at risk. And then their rights through the immigration system, where they have to defend themselves in immigration court, become much more difficult to really to take action on, because we find that a lot of times not only are we able to provide immigration legal services, which is already a very complicated area of law. The Supreme Court has said that it's the one of the most complicated areas of law, but we're able to provide immigration legal services that are child-centered. So sometimes that means that we provide stuffed animals to a child. Sometimes that means that we provide a fidget spinner or something like that. We work with them to make a plan for the difficult, much like the safety planning that Luna was so expertly explaining before. We make a plan with them for what it's going to be like in court. And we help them get ready. We even have sort of a model courthouse that we use to sort of to where they can use dolls to go through and discuss what it's going to look like. And so having not only losing not only the ability to navigate the immigration legal system, stand up for the custodial rights so that they have even very baseline protections. Both of those sort of pillars of what we try to do every day would be at serious risk without a lawyer to kind of monitor. And I've been pretty emphatic about the fact that it's really one of the best things that you can do to strengthen the hand of a child trafficker to take away the lawyer of the child that they're trying to target, because that lawyer is that child's voice in many instances, and is the traffickers often use the tool of intimidation through distorting the immigration system, or manipulating the lack of status that a child is experiencing to manipulate them and achieve their goals. And so the best thing you can do to enhance the strength of a child trafficker is to take away that child's lawyer. And so I really truly believe that this is a pretty significant threat to the well-being of these 800 kids. And then kids who may follow them, kids who may come into custody later in Michigan, and then the 26,000 kids across the United States, as well as children that may come into custody later. It was very important that we were there in 2018, for example, when the family separation crisis took place. And without a legal advocate, it is hard to know whether those 49 separated children that ended up in Michigan may have made their way back to their families, including one child who was only 10 months old that we represented during that time. And so the path forward is very unclear for these funds, and they're absolutely critical to protect even a baseline for some kind of due process for these kids. Sorry, that was probably more than you really
No.
wanted, but like I can talk for a very long time about this.
No, that was excellent. That was a very detailed understanding. Now I have a much more detailed understanding of the work exactly that Mark does. The sensitive locations or protected areas policy is gone now on a federal level. What does it mean for the communities that you work with now that those protected areas like hospitals, schools, places of worship, etc., aren't protected anymore?
I can go really fast. I mean, I think just like the way the fear is being used to scare people out of having their basic needs met is really concerning. The fact that people don't even know if they can go seek medical treatment, if necessary. The fear that people don't want to go to grocery stores. Mind you, that's not under the same the protection that you were speaking about. But concerns that I feel like we've seen within our organization is just how. I don't know if everybody understands that when a migrant comes here, that they're generally giving up everything they've ever really known. And I think, I don't know if people think they're coming for handouts or what the situation is, but to think that you would go from somewhere where you're very familiar, it's your culture, everything you know and love is there, and you can't go back, it must be because the situation that you're leaving was rather dire. So then to get here and also be almost like suffocated out of having your basic needs met is very concerning. And so I would say, our organization is trying to find other ways to address those concerns, whether that be that we have a food pantry here that might be allowing people to come in and still have some of the basic needs met, trying to assure them we do things like vaccination clinics here, so that people can still obtain those sort of things in more of like a protected space. Ensuring that if we're referring clients out to places, it's going to be to organizations that do have very extensive plans in place to protect them once they get there, I think is the best type of plan that we have in place right now. But I would say it is a very dire situation. I am very worried, especially thinking of minors and children that are stuck here without a lot of guidance or support on what they can do to end up in situations where their rights are being manipulated, where predators might have a stronger ability to abuse them, to with like you got to think how many times when somebody goes to school, that's the one place where they might have access to resources like counselors, social workers, teachers that are trained to be mandated reporters, and to see, like intervene in the face of neglect and abuse. And the fact that it's going to be taking away from them, it just, as Eleanor said, it strengthens more of that dark side of what's going on because there aren't a lot of systems in place to protect them. I don't think it's going to discourage people from participating society in a negative way. If anything, it's just very much getting in the way of anybody's ability to flourish at all. So,
Yeah, I think you're right.
yeah.
I mean, it's the disconnection, right? I mean, it's the disconnection from society is what the real concern is. One of the real concerns.
Luna, did you want to jump in really quick?
Oh, yes, just really, really quick. Of course, this has meant giving up many services and our rights, but we are empowering people to take care of themselves as a community, as empower themselves by knowing their rights. And I think this is a really, really important thing.
And I think it's important that listeners also know that Centro is still a safe place to go. There are some special codified in law protections over places that offer some of the services that Centro has. And so for people who are listening who may be experiencing or working with people who experience victimization, they should not fear approaching a center like that. That is a place where they can be, where there are beyond the protected areas policy, extra protections that remain in place as of the recording of this, that I believe are really important. And that's extra critical right now because, as many listeners may also be aware, there has been a lot of gossip and rumors, and then also a lot of false information. That has been put out that's targeted at people who are survivors of domestic violence and people who are victims of crime and seeking those forms of relief. and really overstating some of the limitations on protections for them. And so those protections remain available to people. And although they would be well advised to carry proof of the fact that they're seeking those protections, it's still important for people to know that victim service centers are there for them.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all. I want to thank Eleanor, Michaela, and Luna, one for the most importantly for the work that they're doing, the heroic work that they're doing, and the organizations that they work for are doing in our communities here in Michigan. And thank them again for agreeing to be on this podcast today to talk about this very important issue. You can find connections to their organizations on our website at michiganschildren.org. And please, anybody who's listening to this that cares about kids and families and is discouraged by what we're seeing and the focus on the immigration issues from the federal level, please engage with your elected officials at all levels of government, local, state, and federal, to try to get us back on course for a kinder and more compassionate state and country, as Luna indicated. I'm Matt Gillard, the President and CEO of Michigan's Children. Thanks once again for tuning in to Speaking for Kids. And join us again next month as we discuss another issue that's impacting kids and families here in the state of Michigan. Thank you.
You've been listening to Speaking for Kids, the podcast for Michigan's children with host Matt Gillard. Thanks for joining us. To explore these and other issues relevant to our state's children, youth, and families, and to build your advocacy muscle, go to our website at www.michiganschildren.org. You'll find links and news about past and future podcast topics under our Resource tab and action alerts under the Take Action tab. Find and like us on Facebook and Twitter. Terry and Stephen Wallace produced this podcast. Contact them with your questions and ideas for other topics. Michigan's Children is a nonprofit advocacy organization, an independent voice working to reduce disparities in child outcomes from cradle to career through policy change.